Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1963, that the song Louie Louie was released by the Kingsmen. The FBI investigated this song, and what did they find? Was it A, evidence of obscene lyrics? Was it B, evidence of payola? Was it C, evidence of an organized crime conspiracy, or D, none of the above? So what did the FBI discover in their investigation of Louie Louie? And question number two, what was the year and who was on the cover of the very first issue of the Rolling Stone magazine? Was it A, 1959, with a picture of Elvis Presley? Was it B, 1964, with a picture of Mick Jagger? Was it C, 1967, with a picture of John Lennon? Or D, 1973, with a picture of Stevie Wonder? So who and when first issue Rolling Stone magazine? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of November 7th. Well, it was on this day back in 1971 that Led Zeppelin's album Led Zeppelin IV was released. That album included the song Stairway to Heaven. That was 1971, today. And it was 20 years ago today, 2005, that the original Guitar Hero game was released in North America. And almost exactly 1 year later, 2006, that the game Guitar Hero 2 for PlayStation 2 was released in North America. So that's both 2005 and 2006 today.
Since I was a child, tried to be what I am not. Lied and I've enjoyed it all my life. I lied to my dear mother, to my sisters and my brother. Now I'm lying to my children and my wife. Big Hat, no cattle.
Randy Newman's Big Hat, No Cattle introduces our country music news. Is authenticity in country music a load of BS? Joshua Headley says, yep. This is published in IMDb.com on the 31st of October, 2025. The country music community is still recovering from the great authenticity debate of this past summer, which found artists like Charlie Crockett, Gavin Adcock, and Zach Bryan engaging in an online battle royale to determine who is the most genuine country artist of all. Joshua Hadley, a Florida native who began playing fiddle at age 8 and just released a stellar album of Western swing music called All Hat, can't help but laugh at the whole brouhaha. In his song, All Hat, No Cattle, he pokes holes in the very idea. I ain't got no horse, I can't rope or ride, but I got me a Stetson about 4 foot high. He sings, admitting that he's far from a cowpoke, but that's all right with me. Hadley tells Rolling Stone's Nashville Now podcast that he wrote the song with a self-deprecating ire. It just started at me poking fun at myself and criticism I've received over a lack of authenticity, which it's just a big bunch of BS. You don't have to be elbow deep in a cow to make a country record. Back in August, however, that seemed to be the criteria, at least in the war of words waging on social media. Most country singers aren't real cowboys. They've never done cowboy work or farming or anything like that, Hadley says. I grew up in suburbia in Florida, and I'm not a cowboy, and I don't want to be a cowboy, and I never claimed to be a cowboy. I just like country music. Around Nashville, Hadley is known as the ultimate working musician. He plays a circuit of honky-tonks each week, including the venerable Roberts Western World on Broadway, Dee's Country Cocktail Lounge in Madison, Tennessee, and Skinny Dennis in East Nashville, where he just hosted a release show for All Hat. The large crowd on hand attested to his, well, authenticity. Most people found country music through something else, or they tried something else, and it's not the most popular thing anymore, so they jumped over here, Hadley says. That's not me. I've always just wanted to play country music, and to me, that's authentic. And in classical and soundtrack music news, as noted in a 29 October 2025 article in ClassicFM.com, John Williams will compose the score for Steven Spielberg's upcoming movie, marking the 93-year-old composer's 30th collaboration with the celebrated director. His career spans over 65 years, and his work is known for its lush symphonic style and blend of romanticism, impressionism, and atonal music. Williams has won 5 Academy Awards, including 4 for Best Original Score and 1 for Best Scoring. He's also received 23 Grammy Awards, 4 Golden Globes, and 7 British Academy Film Awards. There are scant details available about the upcoming production, which doesn't seem to have a publicly available title yet, but it's rumored to be a UFO-themed adventure and is slated for release next year, 2026. Universal Pictures has described the film simply as, quote-unquote, a new original event film starring Josh O'Connor, Emily Blunt, Coleman Domingo, Colin Firth, and Eve Hewson. Williams and Spielberg's partnership began back in 1974 with the Sugarland Express, and the pair have since produced some of cinema's most memorable soundtracks, including Jaws, E.T., Jurassic Park, and Schindler's List. And in music research and technology, we have this book review. Prepare to care more about tubas than you thought possible. Name of the book, The Perfect Tuba. This is written by Sam Quinones in Bloomsbury Press, 370 pages. And the review is written by Chris Hewitt in the News and Observer on the 2nd of November, 2025. Add the tuba to the list of book subjects you probably thought you didn't care about, but that is suddenly compelling as heck. We've had entire books about salt, the digestive system, and the color mauve, and every one of them was oddly riveting. So too is, quote-unquote, The Perfect Tuba. Author Sam Quinones, who was bummed out by the bleak reporting he had to do for his award-winning book about the opiate epidemic, Dreamland, responded by pivoting to something kinder and more life-affirming. Enter the tuba. Quinones's title refers to one of the first of many oddities we meet in the book. It's widely, perhaps universally agreed that the two finest tubas in the world are in the possession of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. The 90-year-old instruments were instantly proclaimed perfect in tone and power, and virtually every tuba manufacturer has tried to unlock the secret with varying degrees of lack of success. The perfect tuba is packed with intriguing factoids about the tuba. In World War II, for example, the Japanese used its booming sound to warn of attacks. Unsure what to do with unused tubas, people have turned them into bird baths and then back again to tubas. They're considered one of the humbler instruments because they were born of circuses and brass bands rather than conservatories. Playing them requires so much effort that the life of a tubist is shorter than other instrumentalists. Some orchestras have arranged their pension programs to reflect that. A veteran journalist, Quinones, is a terrific reporter who seems to have interviewed everyone who ever picked up a tuba or sousaphone. That meticulousness is the only way a book gets all through those totally tubular nuggets. It's possibly Quinones is too thorough. In fact, there are a lot of people discussed in The Perfect Tuba, particularly when he begins writing about heated marching band competitions in Texas or the college that churns out most of our country's high school band directors, and the book's non-chronological structure makes it hard to keep them straight. But would I want him to edit out any of that stuff? I would not. As he goes deeper into the motivations of tuba players and the joys of participating in a band or symphony in which a group of individually create collective beauty it becomes clear that the perfect tuba is about a lot more than a brass instrument that takes up the entire back seat of most automobiles. By the end of the book, the concept of the perfect tuba has shifted from the actual instrument to being a metaphor for anything that a person is passionate about and dedicated to. According to Quinones, your tuba, quote-unquote, may be a bed of dahlias or an expertly swarm lap in a pool. And the fact that it can never be perfect, that you'll always be working toward that unattainable ideal, is part of what makes it perfect for you. Steely Dan's Hey 19 introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled 20 Songs and 10 Groups That Are the Epitome of Dad Rock. This is written by Quentin Thane Singer in Forbes magazine on the 31st of October, 2025. Dad rock is the fascinating label in pop culture that's often used to describe older rock music, a meme that's become a genre. The definition of dad rock is pretty straightforward, but also quite broad. It usually refers to rock music that's popular among modern dads, like classic rock, 80s rock, and more recently 90s and early 2000s rock. Every decade of rock music will inevitably have bands and songs that fall into the dad rock category. Although not all old rock music is dad rock, lots of dad rock is in fact older rock music. The top dad rock bands. The origins of the term dad rock can be directly traced to Pitchfork music critic Rob Mitchum, who introduced the term in his review of Wilco's 2007 LP, Sky Blue Sky. At the time, Mitchum used the term dad rock to criticize music for sounding too straightforward and derivative of classic rock, but its negative connotation has faded over time. Today, classic rock titans like AC/DC, Creed, Bruce Springsteen, and more are hailed as dad rock heroes. These artists have produced some of the most recognizable rock hits from the last 30-plus years and towed the line of writing straightforward song structures and approachable melodies that many dads and moms can get behind. Here's a rundown of some of the most successful and iconic dad rock acts and celebrated dad rock anthems of the last 50-plus years. Number one, Steely Dan. The effect Steely Dan's amalgamative rock music has on dads is something that should be studied for centuries. Yacht rock, soft rock, jazz rock, whatever. Steely Dan plays its most certainly also dad rock. Hits like Reeling in the Years, Do It Again, and Peg have kept dads moving and grooving for decades. There is a litany of 70s rock bands that sit atop the dad rock Mount Olympus, but there really isn't another dad rock band that writes instrumentally sophisticated and melodically straightforward tunes like Steely Dan. And And this article gives as number 2, Bruce Springsteen. Number 3, Eric Clapton. Number 4, The Eagles. Merging folk, country, and good old rock and roll, The Eagles helped popularize rock guitar music in the early 70s and became one of the defining classic rock bands. As is often the case for classic rock bands, dads are among the target audience for The Eagles and the band's approachable soft rock hits. Anthems like Hotel California, Take It Easy, and Life in the Fast Lane all showcase the band's dad rock energy and pleasantly plain and direct approach to songwriting. The remaining 5 top dad rock bands discussed in this article are number 5, Creed, number 6, AC/DC, number 7, Nickelback, number 8, Rush, number 9, Van Halen, and number 10, U2. The bottom line, dad rock can be a very subjective and nuanced genre, and it's often used as a blanket term to just describe rock music of yesteryear. However, modern dad rock has come to be defined by its obviously appealing qualities. While not all of the bands and songs listed here meet all of the criteria of dad rock, they all manage to appeal to the dads and others who fancy a good rock tune.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Guess I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
James Taylor introduces our local music news. This article's from WTVD-ABC11. As noted on October 22nd, 2025, the 2025 Raleigh Wide Open Music Festival welcomed 155,000 people from October 3rd and 4th, which is a record when it comes to attendance for the event. It was a weekend filled with music, food, art, and community. The weekend kicked off with a celebration event on Thursday, October 2nd, at North Carolina State University Centennial Campus. The two-day festival featured 40 bluegrass, Americana, gospel, and folk performers on 4 free outdoor stages, as well as a ticketed headline show at Red Hat Amphitheater in downtown Raleigh. Festival goers enjoyed craft beer, local food trucks, art vendors, and interactive experiences throughout downtown Raleigh. The revived Raleigh Wide Open name is a nod to the city's past while embracing its future, signaling an era of growth, creativity, and connection. According to its website, the Raleigh Wide Open name was born in Raleigh and dates back to 2006. That's when downtown experienced a cultural renaissance. Fayetteville Street reopened to traffic, and within a few years, the new Raleigh Convention Center was built and the Red Hat Amphitheater opened. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1963 that the song Louie Louie was released by the Kingsmen. The FBI investigated this song. What did they find? Was it A, evidence of obscene lyrics? Was it B, evidence of payola? C, evidence of an organized crime conspiracy? Or D, none of the above? And the correct answer is answer D, none of the above. As noted in an AI overview, the FBI investigated the song Louie Louie by the Kingsmen because of widespread rumors that its unintelligible lyrics contained obscene messages. After an investigation, the FBI concluded that the lyrics were so hard to understand that they could not be interpreted as obscene, and there found found no evidence of a violation. The investigation was sparked by complaints from the public, including one to Attorney General, and was fueled by the song's popularity and misunderstood vocals. The official investigation in 1964, the FBI began their investigation into whether the song violated laws against the interstate transportation of obscene material. The FBI's conclusion? The investigation, which included playing the record at various speeds and interviewing band members, ultimately concluded that the lyrics were, quote-unquote, unintelligible at any speed. Because the lyrics could not be deciphered, the FBI could not find any evidence of obscenity, and the case was closed. And the answer to our second question, what was the year and who was on the cover of the very first issue of Rolling Stone magazine? Was that A, 1958 with Elvis Presley? Was it B, 1963 with Mick Jagger? Was it C, 1967 with John Lennon? Or D, 1973 with Stevie Wonder? Correct answer? Answer C, John Lennon. As noted in Britannica.com, Rolling Stone was co-founded in San Francisco in 1967 by a former student at the University of California, Berkeley, and a jazz critic for the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper. The first issue appeared on November the 9th, 1967, with John Lennon on the cover. The magazine's creators intended Rolling Stone to be a barometer of the artistic tastes and political sensibilities of the student generation. The magazine effectively combined passion and professionalism, using both proper English and, quote-unquote, street language. Many well-known writers and journalists, including Hunter S. Thompson and Cameron Crowe, started their careers with Rolling Stone. However, let's close out today's program with a song whose review led to the creation of the genre known as dad rock. Here's Wilco's Sky Blue Sky.
On information, the brass was phasing tunes I couldn't place.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
Oh, I didn't die, I should be satisfied, I survived.